Welcome into the Pick Six Podcast. I have no pithy introduction this week, but I am Evan Bland with Sam McEwen, Jimmy Watkins from the Omaha World Herald.
You guys, we have a low buyout.
We do.
There's your pithy entry.
our buyouts are low. Our enthusiasm is high. And we're going to talk some football today. Transfer portal. We're going to talk an upcoming recruiting weekend that's pretty interesting. And Nebraska's new 2022 schedule as tweaked and altered and adjusted by the Big Ten. But men's basketball is where we're going to start today. Nebraska dropped another, I guess you can call it a close one, against Illinois. 21 in a row against ranked teams.
It was actually a damn good basketball
game. Yeah, it was a good game.
6-50 against Power 6 teams now, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the numbers keep adding up. I don't know. Where do you want to start with men's basketball as the guy who's been covering it day in and day out?
Where to start? I would say that... I don't know what this critical mass is, but we are going to reach a point where right now it's 6 Big Ten games without a win. Likely will be 7 after Friday against Purdue, then Indiana, then Ohio State, then Wisconsin. I just, when do we get to the point where we ran a story yesterday about how Nebraska would have to give Fred Hoiberg a lot of money to fire him this year? I don't know. My standing opinion has been since the beginning of the season, I don't think they're going to do that. I don't know that they necessarily even should. I think you can draw a lot of parallels between Hoiberg's tenure at Nebraska and Scott Frost's tenure at Nebraska. Both came in with stellar coaching reputations. Obviously, Fred came in off a coaching failure at Chicago. Well, Scott was riding high off an undefeated season at UCF. But both came in with great reputations. Both had ties to Nebraska's program and Lincoln itself. And that both have struggled to register any sort of signature win since then. And Frost got another chance. Fred, it seems like, is being treated a little bit more harshly, even despite having a harder entry point where he had to recruit his entire first roster in like a month and then had a COVID season that, I mean, they weren't, the 2020-21 Huskers weren't exactly zooming upward before they shut they had to have the month-long shutdown because of COVID, but it certainly didn't help to have to play 15 games in 32 days or whatever it was. But even having all that context, it's just, you have to win a game that matters, whether it doesn't even have to be against a good team. You just have to beat someone who is on your level, is a high major. Right now, Nebraska is ranked number 219 in the net rankings. The second lowest ranked Big Ten team is ranked 116th. So there's a 103 spot difference. And that team happens to be Rutgers, who just beat Nebraska silly on the road. Rutgers, tough place to play. 7,000 fans right on top of you, all that stuff. You lost by 30 to the second worst team in the conference by some metric. It's really, really, really bad.
So let's provide a little bit more context. They're 2.5 years in. Fred Hoiberg's buyout is at $18.5 million, in part because of a contract extension that he got and agreed to 3 months after the pandemic started and 3 months after his first season at 7-25. What was the context of the 7-25 and then get a contract extension? The idea was that Nebraska felt like what they inherited with when Tim Miles left was sort of a smoking crater. Not that Tim left it in a mess in terms of its discipline or character or any of that, but that Tim's best team, the team that kind of fell apart in his last year, those are all old guys. They all left. Mm-hmm. Isaiah Roby went to the NBA. Glenn Watson, Copeland, and Palmer all graduated. Thomas Allen transferred to North Carolina State. The one guy, I can't remember where he went, but he wasn't very good and he got benched. There just wasn't very much left over. There just wasn't. And so they had to build an entire roster from scratch. And they got Cam Mack and they got Deshaun Burke and they got Kevin Cross, who's now at Tulane, and Ivan Udrago and all these other guys that they got. And Well, they were very good. I mean, Fred Hoiberg broke a chalkboard memorably in their summer trip to Italy because he was so pissed off at him. Year two comes, and, you know, I think they did like their roster a lot, and COVID hit. And then Derek Walker got a 14-game suspension, and then COVID hit, and they had a one-month pause. And when they came back, we've got numbers to show that they were awful for the first three or four games. Then they started to get better. But that was a kind of a lost season because of COVID. They finished 7-20. And then Delano Banton leaves. And I'll say this, that I was wrong. In hindsight, I was wrong in thinking that was going to be a plus move. It's not been a plus move. And that's because Delano Banton was replaced by Alonzo Verge, and they're not similar people. They're not similar people. They're also not similar players. And so what you have at this moment is a roster that's A, missing its second or third best player in Trey McAllen's, B, probably missing its eighth best player in Wilhelm Breidenbach. They're higher on him than I am, I'll be honest. C is mired in a long losing streak. D is playing some hella tough teams. I just used the word hella. That was 2007. Anyway. They're playing really good teams for the most part. Yeah. The Rutgers thing, they lost by 28. I'm just telling you right now, Nebraska very rarely wins the second half of a two-game road trip. They don't usually win those games. So the idea that they were going to go and beat Rutgers because Rutgers isn't quite as good as Michigan State, Ohio State, and Illinois was faulty to me. Yeah, you don't want to lose by 28, but it was the third game in 6 days. 5 days? 5 days. Sunday, Tuesday, Saturday, 5 days, 6 days. It wasn't a good setup for them to play at Rutgers. I'm not trying to make excuses, but here's where it stands. They haven't won very many games. 6-50 against Power 6 teams.
Yeah.
Anybody know the anybody? Anybody know who the Power 6 teams they've beaten are outside of the Big Ten?
Oh, outside of the Big Ten.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could tell you that one.
Washington State's won, and then there might have been another one.
I couldn't tell you right offhand.
So they haven't beaten very many good teams.
No, I think that's the only one. They've had five Big Ten wins.
They've been very dysfunctional in terms of their team. The chemistry changes constantly. They've turned over the roster 3 years in a row. They've had problem players 3 years in a row where it was Cam Mack initially, and then it was Teddy Allen, and now it's Verge. Like, and I'm sorry, he plays and he scores, and that's good, but so did Teddy. And so there's obviously issues there, and so it's the you have on the one side, you would seriously pay $18.5 million for a sport that might only be the third most popular sport in Nebraska to pay out a coach? And then who the hell are you going to get? And, oh my God, this is a bad product. And it's at that point where the person over here, the bad product guy, is spending someone's money, and it's not Nebraska's. It's a booster. Someone's going to have to pay that out because I don't think they got $18.5 million lying around to apportion to send him Fred Hoiberg packing. And then again, unless you got Tyrone Lue on speed dial and he's willing to leave the clip show, that's where he is, right? He's willing to leave there and come to like Nebraska in April, which why would he do that? Who the hell are you going to hire? Who isn't going to have to start all over again? So you'd be like, well, you know, we're going to get rid of this guy and pay $18.5 million to do it. And then next year, we're going to have the exact same thing that we had last year, only we have $18.5 million less in which to do it.
I mean, the roster reset is inevitable anyway, isn't it, though? I mean, Jimmy and I were just talking about it. Look at the existing roster. Who do you expect to come back next year? Like, most of those guys, it feels like this is going to be a something that happens next year.
I think it's
going to
be another turn, right? Because we're looking at...
Derek Walker's New World. I mean, he can't transfer anywhere.
Right.
So he'd come back. Trey would come back.
Think Trey would come back? Trey has said on multiple occasions. Well, he said on multiple occasions. He said last season, last chance.
Hurt.
Okay. Yeah.
He's missed half this season.
Yeah.
He'd
come back without Bryce after. Yeah.
Again, I don't know where he's going to transfer for free.
Okay.
Obviously, Kobe Webster wouldn't be coming back.
Right.
Where's CJ Wilcher going?
CJ Stan. That's
he'd
one.
Have to come.
Yeah, he'll be back.
I guess Casey could go somewhere else.
Casey's another one I think. But like, yeah.
Okay, so we've just rattled off four. Who are we missing?
Latt.
He graduates.
Yeah.
Duardo Andre. Sure. I guess he could. I don't know where he'd go. Where would he go?
Yeah, it's not an extreme
FAU
makeover the way it's
or
been,
I mean some group of, you know, I don't know, mid major.
But the the major, like, Virgil be gone, obviously.
Yeah.
Bryce is probably going to the draft. Trey has used the, I don't know, I just keep
getting caught up. Is he going to go out of the draft? Is he going to go to the draft, like, out of, like, spite? Or
I just think that he's, because he's going to be, if he's, as long as he's going to be a first-round pick, which right now he's still being mocked as most places,
sure.
I think he would go.
Yeah. Well, he does some stuff that looks like a first-round pick, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
Anyway, that's the question. It's like, okay, so you're right. Yes, the roster's going to reset either way. You're true enough. But do you want to do that and give this guy another shot? Let's say they win 5 or 6 more games.
That obviously changes the equation.
It would change the equation.
Sure.
I don't know that they're going to.
My thing is, the Rutgers thing, yes, the schedule put them in a bad spot. But when we start to talk about guys not trying, which is whatever, you know, Hoiberg is careful about saying that teams quit except against Michigan when he literally used the words quit. But when you get to the point where it's they're mailing it in, if that happens, let's say that happens 2 or 3 more times, I just don't like with you have an already existing tension anytime you have a new athletic director and a coach that he didn't hire, particularly here at Nebraska. It's a coach that he didn't hire and a coach that has ties to Nebraska, but do we really, is Hoiberg like an inner circle Nebraska, like part of the family? No. I don't think he's considered that way. That tension already exists, and you have a situation where the product has been really bad, and they operate in a way that is not... It's not the traditionally, the way they build their roster is not the traditional method for building a roster. It's no longer counter to the norm, but it's like people, when Trev Albert, who wears a suit and tie to everything and has, I would say, traditional values, I think Trev Albert believes that the way you build a basketball team is recruiting a bunch of freshmen and developing them all into quality seniors alongside one, like Illinois did last night, has done since Brad Underwood has got. That's how Trev Alberts thinks you should build a basketball team. That's my read on the situation.
Yes.
That's not how Hoiberg and them have operated. It's not working, and it doesn't seem like they're going to change the way they do that. That's going to continue to be the way they want to build the roster.
Well, who are the guys among the recruits they're getting? Denham Dawson, and are those guys NBA guys?
Ramel Lloyd, because Sierra Canyon ties, I think, would sure. be the closest one. I don't
but
think
I
he'll
mean,
be
like,
a one-and-done
right
guy.
Way,
I don't think so. I don't think so. But that it's not necessarily about the one-and-done thing. It's just about the constant churn of the roster. I don't think that sits right with Trev, and obviously these results, particularly just the way if you get blown out and you're not – like fans are pointing out that the effort isn't there and – when you start using words like embarrassing and
right.
and that sort of stuff, that's where I think it can reach. I don't think we're there. I don't even necessarily think still that they should fire. I think Fred Hoiberg's a really good basketball coach.
Yeah,
I just think that it's a mismatch.
You cover it. So
yeah,
I get
it's a mishmash roster.
I'm just talking about
and that's
the
not going to change.
Like the two options are there.
Right.
Option number one is this is horrible. Somebody give some money. I don't have any. Will somebody give some money? Like, there's that position.
Yeah.
And then there's the, okay.
That's not going away.
Well,
like,
no, it's
even
not
if
going
they
away,
do,
even
this
like,
happens again next year, right? Like,
you know,
still a lot of money.
You have to weigh, like, okay, how many season ticket holders are we going to lose? Or, like, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it's Nebraska basketball fan base is pretty durable. Like, they're going to keep coming back. They've been watching bad basketball for a long time. So, whether it's really bad or kind of bad, I don't know. Like, I don't know what that gradation is. So, it'll be worth watching. And again, do you really think that, given what's happened this season, that Fred Hoiberg, if he gets however many years, is ever going to do this again? Like, is ever going to construct his roster like that?
It's the only way he knows. I mean, and if you're changing that, you'd have to, like, that. There's suggesting that Nebraska has to change the way they construct their roster is, like, that is a seismic decision for them to make. That's changing that's the entire philosophy of the way they build their roster. We talked about this last week. They have, Matt Abdelmassi views college basketball roster construction as NBA free agency.
Yeah.
You have to have free agents on your team to win. And I think the rest of the Big Ten looks at it as NFL free agency, where, ooh, we really, like, this one spot we couldn't fill in the draft / recruiting, to stick with that analogy.
Sure.
That's where we need a transfer.
Yeah.
And it's I think because of the success they had with it at Iowa State, I think it'd be really hard to divorce them of that. I really do, because they have had, like, they have so much proof. Maybe they don't have it here, but they, in their mind, they have a large swath of proof. And Matt even did it a little bit at St. John's. He built a tournament team real fast there, mm-hmm. because with this same process. So I do think they would keep doing it. Yeah. And I think they would just chalk this up to, you know what? The portal's wonky and we got a wonky batch.
I was talking with Jimmy about this too. Don't you think basketball, this is my opinion, that basketball, if you're really bad at it, is the toughest sport to sort of endure a season where you're awful. Because like in football, you play once a week. If you're bad, it sort of gets lost in the noise of college football Saturday. You know, baseball, people kind of stop showing up and it can be kind of goofy, weird, fun when you're really bad. Basketball, man, you're getting a reminder two or three times a week about things. And it feels like that's what it's become with Nebraska basketball, where, hey, Tuesday night at 8 p.m., oh, yeah, Nebraska's really bad. You know, Saturday at 7 p.m., oh, yeah, Nebraska's really bad. And it seems like with every loss, it just reignites this discussion. And, you know, like you guys have said, there's still a lot of season to go. This could get worse. This could get a little better. But there's no doubt they need some wins to take some
and
pressure
it should
off.
Be noted,
this is not fun.
Yeah, it should be noted that Rutgers, along with Michigan and Auburn, right now looks like the anomaly, right? Like last night they played Illinois, who is ranked 25th, but I think is going to end up being ranked much higher than that by the end of the season, to a draw basically until the last 4 minutes where they fell apart. And that's another, you could chalk that up to roster construction as well. A lot of guys who haven't played together much, that's not going to help you late in games. And then the Michigan-Auburn thing, I still don't know how much stock put in that illness, but there's three of those, and then there's a bunch of other ones where they're right there. I mean, the other double-digit losses they have, Indiana, where they just couldn't make any shots, but they were clearly, the effort didn't dwell there. So
right.
It's hard to say that we still don't know. I think we know. They're bad, right? But we can still, there's still more to be learned about how much incremental progress
sure.
they're making.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, they're bad in a certain way. They don't have good enough players.
Right.
I get it.
Let's move on to football, if that's all right.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
We got a lot of stuff there.
Yeah, we do. So we kind of do a look back and then sort of a present and a look ahead. The look back portion of this would be how active they've been in this offseason so far. So the season ended on Black Friday. Since then, Nebraska's added nine transfer portal additions. Along with what they did in the high school class, they've added a junior college player as well. Sam, you kind of wanted to go through some of these additions, breaking them down by tiers.
Yeah.
Is that kind of the idea? So we have nine players. We have specialists, we have offensive players, we have, I think, just one defensive player right now in Tommy Hill, defensive back. So where would you like to start with that?
So let's try to break this down into three tiers.
Yeah.
High impact, important piece, and we don't really know. Could be, but at this point, question mark.
Okay.
In that top group, it's pretty obvious that Casey Thompson is in the top group. Is he in the top group for everybody?
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's interesting in the sense that I think he's clearly probably going to be the starter of this team. He has the most experience. He's the best thrower of the football. I think if Logan Smothers threw the ball better, he would be right there with him. I think Smothers is still working on that, though. So that piece is still a work in progress. So to me, he is a high-impact guy. The next guy that I would have in that tier is Brian Buscini, the punter. I'm a big punter guy. I think punting is extremely important to the sport of football now. It doesn't hurt you if you have a good punter It can really help you if you have a great one, and it can really hurt you if you have a bad one. Good is probably where Nebraska's aiming. They might have great, but they probably won't have horrible. And so for me, those are the two guys that I would put in that high impact space. I wouldn't necessarily put anybody else there. Those are the two that I would put in the high impact.
I agree. Those are the exact two I had in there for the reasons that you said. The way I suppose I looked at this was like Thompson, obvious, Bushini, a major upgrade at a position Nebraska struggled at, especially relative to its peers. So for me, the next group, contributor, the way I differentiated contributor and sort of the jury's out is what have these guys done elsewhere? And so to me, the guys that can contribute would be Trey Palmer, the LSU transfer, who has produced as a receiver, and he's really produced as a return man in a couple of years at LSU. Timmy Bleakrode, the kicker, who has kicked well at Furman. Isaiah Garcia Castaneda, who has produced at New Mexico State as a receiver. And then the two offensive linemen, Kevin Williams from Northern Colorado and Hunter Anthony from Oklahoma State. Those guys are both 22-year-old guys who have their degrees, who have started, who have filled out physically and have done it before. Those are guys, because of that track record, that I would think it's reasonable to expect them to come in and not totally disappear, have some sort of a role, at the very least provide depth. So that kind of group of five is what I would say is on the contributor side. And then the jury's out. Not to say that these guys aren't talented players, but Tommy Hill, the DB from Arizona State, and DeAndre Jackson, who just committed, the running back from A&M, neither of those guys have played much at all beyond very sort of distant reserve roles. So the talent could be there, but they haven't done it yet, and I don't think you can count on them to produce if you're Nebraska, just based on their track record.
Yeah, I'm with you on Hill and Jackson. We'll just have to see that.
Oh, Jackson's at the bottom of the tier.
I would say Hill and Jackson to me are the guys on the bottom tier.
Absolutely.
We just have to see. Although that running back room is, I don't think anyone's guaranteed anything in the running back room right now.
Yeah, I would have questions about at least one of the linemen. I think Hunter Anthony is a big question mark. I know he started at Oklahoma State, but he lost his job. He's kind of working as a tight end. I'll be curious to see how he fits in. You know, somebody's going to have to move positions for him to start at Nebraska. Because I think right now, Teddy Prochazka and Bryce Benhart, even if you move Corkin inside, which I think you can, you could have a Hickson, you could have Piper at center, and you could have Corcoran on the right side with Prochazka on the left. I'm not exactly sure where Anthony fits in yet. Kevin Williams, to me, is a big guy who can play guard and move earth and maybe pull. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I have question marks about Anthony. Jackson, Anthony, and you say Hill.
Just because he hasn't done it at the college level, yeah.
And I would say, I'm not trying to be rude here. I would say the kicker. There's just no way of knowing. You get him up here.
Kickers
you
in general. Kickers in general are that way.
Got to get him in the wind, get him in the environment, kick the ball. I think there's certain qualities about punting that you can control a little bit better if you're better at it. And there's a certain artfulness and craft to punting that, you know, you don't necessarily get in. You can, I think, get into good and bad grooves in punting, but I think you're just a good punter. And kicking, stuff can happen to NFL kickers that they can't explain. It's like a golf swing. It's like getting the yips.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would say he's still a question mark. A little bit. And Jackson is the most interesting pickup they've had. He looks like a good player in high school. The one advantage you like about him is he's got 2 years in a Power 5 program where he learned how to work, right? So you learn how to work in a Power 5 program. You learn what it's like to play, to go to college in a Power 5 program. So that when he comes and he's got 4 years left of eligibility, he's going to be a redshirt freshman, you're not getting a guy that has to learn any of those things. He already knows them. So he'll come to Nebraska and know how to work. That, to me, is about the only plus there because you don't have any sense. He hasn't run the football in 2 years in a game.
And
there's a lot of tread on the tire, but there's nothing proven.
Well, it's an interesting discussion because part of the reason he hasn't carried the ball is because they have a loaded room. I mean, Isaiah Spiller's been unbelievable for those guys for years now. And you look at what he did in high school. He had great tape, great offers.
Yeah.
And then just sort of disappeared. But Nebraska knew of him. They recruited him. Sean Becton recruited him. So it's an interesting sort of deal where, again, like you're not bringing this guy in based on what he's done in college. You're bringing him in based on the relationship. But does that sort of background and pedigree translate now that he at least presumably will have an opportunity?
I think the one guy that I might be a little bit higher on than you guys is Palmer, both because not every five-star is going to be a Hall of Famer, but that distinction comes with status and well-deserved status. They don't give out five stars to anybody. I think the opportunity will be there because he knows Mickey Joseph already. He's the guy in that room right now that has the pre-existing connection. Normally with a transfer, you have the incumbent guys have a leg up on the transfers because they know the system better. They know the position coach better. They know what he looks for. Trey Palmer has that now. He doesn't know the system as well, but he knows the position coach. And for the same reason that Sam thinks Buscini could be a high-impact guy, Trey Palmer could be a high-impact guy the other way in terms of field position. Big Ten West is a field position division. It's a bunch of teams who are trying not to turn the ball over.
That's right.
And move the ball enough to get it back in the same spot and have a short field, right? Punters are very important, and for the same reason that punters are very important in the Big Ten West, punt and kick returners are very important in the Big Ten West. And much like with punting and kicking, Nebraska kind of just is starting at zero with their return game. They didn't get anything out of it. And here's a guy who I think he's maybe, what has he run, 2 touchdowns back in his career, but he has good return yardage numbers, yep. And that can flip a game, yep, against Minnesota. That
one
can
return.
Against Minnesota. Right. That can flip a game against Iowa. Is that high impact enough to be considered high impact? I don't know, but
that's right.
Given the opportunity that exists with him, I don't know what kind of wide receiver he's going to be, but the opportunity is there for him to move into that room and get chances, and the fact that we know that he's a good return man, I would put him in the high impact category.
A kickoff return for a touchdown or a punt return for a touchdown is the functional equivalent of a 3-run home run. How many times do you win when you hit a 3-run homer?
Frequently.
Yeah. A 45-yard return is like a leadoff triple. Like, that's what it is, right? Like, or you got two guys on base. Like, it's fundamentally huge to get those kind of pieces. The punting piece is huge, and Nebraska's just got to get better there. And they have a special teams coach, Bill Bush. You don't want to put a lot on him for yet. You want to give him a chance to put his schemes in the spring and put his guys on special teams, whoever he thinks should be on there. But, you know, come late spring and summer and fall, we'll be seeing if that unit is better than what they've had the last couple of years. I expect that it will be, but they still going to have to prove that.
To your 3-run home run point, it's not just, I guess it depends on how much you believe in forces beyond our control in football, but it's not just the 3 runs that the 3-run home run gives you. It's the air that it sucks out of the pitcher.
Oh, real quick.
And if you're on the road, it's the air that sucks out of the crowd. If you're at no home, question. It's the boost that it gives the crowd. It's a play that just gets people fired That's up right. or dejected on the other side
That's
of it.
That's right. Starting a game with it is a little less important.
Sure.
When like the Wisconsin game, right. Nebraska recovered and rebounded. But when you hit one of those, like in the 6th inning, F it. Like it just kills people. And so, you know, those are the kind of things they've got to find a way to get a couple of those a year. And when we were growing up, they did. They got like 4 of them a year, you know. Yeah,
Dwan Grosses of the world.
Yeah, no they doubt. Block a punt and return it. Mm-hmm. That stuff doesn't happen anymore. And so they've got to find a way to create something special on special teams, and they haven't been able to do it. So that's a good thought on Palmer.
Incidentally, Nebraska may not be done adding transfers. So they have 9 currently. They're in line for a pretty big official visit weekend. So
who's coming, Evan?
Well, I can give you some of the names. We don't have the full official lineup yet, but it's a big weekend just to set it up because it's the last weekend if you're a transfer that you can come visit, make your decision, and then enroll in classes and be a factor this semester through spring ball. Obviously, there'll be another sort of cycle through after spring practices when you know players don't like where they are on the depth chart, and there'll be another round of movement. But this is that big opportunity for players to come in and really start working toward that season. So, again, we don't have the official list yet as far as who exactly is coming. We know three commits are coming. Trey Palmer, who committed to Nebraska sight unseen, will be here. DeAndre Jackson, same sort of deal, although he was here, I believe, earlier in his high school recruiting process. And then DeColdis Crawford will be making his Nebraska debut this weekend as well. So in addition to those three, some other names that it looks like are coming. I think one of the more interesting ones is Tremon Shorts. He's an offensive tackle who transferred from East Tennessee State. He was a multi-time FCS All-American there, played all but a handful of snaps the last two seasons. That's somebody that Nebraska feels like could come in right away and start and be an impact guy, probably at left tackle where he's been
right
in college. Obviously, the quarterback, Chubba Purdy, if he indeed makes it to Lincoln.
He was in Oklahoma.
So he spent 2 days in Oklahoma on a visit, and that's sort of the question is, can he make it to Lincoln? Does that trip actually happen? If it does, I think you still have to like Nebraska's chances. And I know this is a topic that people have different opinions on. I think that Casey Thompson's commitment does not deter Chubba Purdy. I think his respect...
It has to deter him a little bit, right?
I don't think his idea was that he'd come in and be the starter. Okay. I think he was so, and his family were so sold on Mark Whipple and what he could do as a guy with 4 years of eligibility remaining, that he didn't have to approach this thing with that same urgency. And I don't think, for the same reason, I don't think he would expect to start at Oklahoma if he were to go there right away. So I think...
But he could expect that Brent Venables will be there next year.
Sure. That could be a difference maker, especially for somebody who's already transferred.
Now, is he getting a scholarship offer to Oklahoma?
We don't know. I think so. I mean, based on what he put out on social media, okay. I think you would think the answer is yes. So he'll be here. And then you have a couple interesting junior college players who kind of surfaced late this week. I think it's Javier Morton, a defensive back, and Anthony Grant, a running back. You know anything about those guys, Sam?
The running back is a sleeker, you know, Ramir Johnson type. I don't know. If they bring him on, somebody's leaving. They're not going to have seven scholarship running backs in the program come fall. I mean, that's just not efficient at all.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if they bring him in, then I'm not exactly sure. Somebody, they have some sort of tipped hand. Can't tell you much about Morton.
So Morton was a guy who's been at Garden City, originally from Atlanta. He just kind of came under the radar just late this week. Nebraska's really been active with defensive back additions. He was actually an Alabama commit initially in the 2020 class and then went to the
Nadab Joseph,
route. Yeah, very similar to that. And then Anthony Grant, his team, New Mexico Military Institute, actually just won the JUCO national title, beat Iowa Western in the championship. Yeah. He's got 2 years left. He was also a Florida State's primary kickoff return man as a true freshman in 2018. So somebody else who's going to be here this weekend and may factor in. Beyond that, Kylan Griffin is the other notable that is for sure going to be here this weekend, defensive back from Alabama, Montgomery Catholic Prep High School, and he won't make a decision in all likelihood after this weekend. He has trips left to Clemson and USC after this. So those are his final three. He's taking those official visits. And then
you'll find out if Clemson or USC has a spot for him. And if they do, then he'll go to Clemson or USC.
And so presumably, as he has said, after that last trip, before the February 2nd signing date, he'll make a decision from there. And there might be another couple transfers, too. We're not totally sure. We'll find out here probably in the next day or so.
Man, they're really going after the defensive backs, aren't they?
I didn't feel like they needed to add as many as they have. I mean, I know they lost a lot, but they've made some additions already.
Deontay Williams, gone. Cam Taylor-Brick, gone. Nadab Joseph, never was, but he's gone, too.
Markel Dismuke.
That's four.
Mm-hmm.
I think they feel good about. Obviously, they feel good about Newsom and Farmer.
Mm-hmm.
Tells you something about what they're thinking about at safety and corner opposite. Braxton Clark might get that job. He's a unique corner. You know, he's a little bit like Lamar Jackson and the way that he plays. Guy. So there's things about that that are really good, especially deep routes. You know, I don't know how he'll play short, how he'll tackle short. And I know they like Marcus Buford.
Mm-hmm.
Marquise Buford.
And they brought
Deshaun
in
Singleton. I mean, you know, they didn't bring him in to just to hang around. So I think they're trying. I think they're trying to get enough guys in that room and say, all right, out of this group, we need about six. And who are the six? And one of the six might be Isaac Gifford, who's actually at nickel.
Might be. Yep.
So, you know, they've got to figure out what they want their defensive structure to be. I assume it'll be very similar. But Isaac Gifford and JoJo Doman aren't necessarily exactly the same player. So do you want to bring in a nickel corner, a slot corner, or do you want to have Isaac Gifford, or do you want to have Javon Wright, or is Wyndon Huahuli in that spot? No, probably not. He's probably down with Garrett Nelson and Caleb Tanner, who's coming back.
Mm-hmm.
So they got to try to figure out all those pieces. Can Chris Kolarovic go out and step out and play sort of a versatile spot out on the field a little bit? What's cool about Nebraska's defense, as I've said before, is I think they have a really good idea of what they want to do now, and now they just got to plug and play and experiment, and they might get a little better here and a little worse here, but I think they have a good sense of what they want to do. Whereas Nebraska's offense is rebuilding, for my opinion, the third straight year. Like, Lubick came in, they did one thing. Lubick came in year two of Lubick, they were different. You know, they went for the big play. Now with Whipple, they're probably going to go back to more of a ball control, short, throw the football around. We're not necessarily trying to hit the bomb or the play action pass where the tight ends are crossing 37 yards downfield. Like, you're get the ball out. So they're doing it again, and we'll just have to see how that looks with the offense.
Hmm.
I do think to your point about Doman, Chenander has said it. That's just a really hard guy to replace. I think that's a situation where you probably have to. That's not a plug and play spot. That's a situation where you might have to change the responsibility of what that guy might do, or change. You go to the nickel corner.
Or you change it on third down.
Yeah.
You know, so the challenge is that what do you do, you know, so there's third down and there's first and second down. JoJo could stay on the field for all three. Do you have something different on first and second down? Because basically what it was a nickel D.
Yeah.
And JoJo is just a big nickel. What does your nickel now become? Like, is your nickel has to fit into the box. He has to tackle in the box more than likely. Dejon Gomes used to do this, for people who remember Dejon Gomes. Gomes was much smaller than Doman, but quite frankly, he was just as good. Doman was very good, don't get me wrong, but Dejon Gomes was just as damn good. And Eric Haig was just as damn good as Doman. Haig would play higher up. He would play up, and then he would come down. So there's options they have there. Javon Wright is more the Eric Haig size. Gifford is smaller than both of them. And then Kolarovic, maybe he can play out there. You just never know. What do you do on first and second and down? And then what do you do on third? And usually teams don't run third tempo on third and long. So you can usually bring a corner in. Do you slide somebody down? Who would be the third corner? Would it be Buford? Would you put a safety out and bring Farmer down? There's a lot of different things you can try to do. I don't know. But those are you can have those conversations rationally. Without, like, with Nebraska's offense, you were like, well, we don't really know if Xavier Betts is going to be on the field this week. We just don't know. Well, how many snaps did he play last week?
Four.
We don't know. And so, like, that would happen all the time. Like, Frost's offense threw those little swing passes for three straight years, those little smoke routes, and then this last year, they didn't throw those. They ran the triple option instead. And so then it would be, well, which guy's going to run the triple option? Is it going to be Teray? Is it going to be Levi Falk? So, like, there's all these different components that Frost's offense was operating on. It was fascinating to watch. I mean, Frost is a brilliant guy as it relates to play design. There's just no question. He's forgotten more football than most people will ever know. It's just that it wasn't cohesive. Like, they'd hit these big plays, and then they would get down to the 22 and be like, I don't know what we're going to run. Because we aren't really good at any one thing other than creating big plays.
And the conversation that we had about the basketball team and the roster turnover, there's a little bit of that now when we're talking about the offense, too, where
there is.
You have a new offensive coordinator. You talk about all these transfers they've brought in. Most of them have so far been on the offensive side, and it's no coincidence that those players will have new position coaches as well. And I remember talking with some Huskers last fall at different points about how they sort of broke in or helped acclimate these transfers that have come in. And they said, you know, it really takes a lot of those veteran players kind of stepping out and saying, like, all right, I'll do some extra film study with you, or all right, I'll take you aside and do this sort of thing, and the position coaches too. And so when you have so much turnover from personnel, it's going to be interesting to see how quickly they can settle in, because I think there's this sort of assumption in some ways that, oh, you know, he's done it somewhere else, he's pretty good, he'll plug right in. But like, there really is a sort of a learning curve, if for nothing else than the terminology of what right. they want to do on offense, that I think it's going to be, you know, it's going to take a little longer than 30 seconds in the microwave and they've got this thing down.
And that's where what I was talking about with Palmer kind of applies here too. These incumbent guys who, and this sort of relates to the next, after the spring game, the next exodus that's coming. A lot of these incumbent guys who would normally have a leg up on the transfers don't have that, because it's ground zero for everybody. Everyone has, there's what you did before doesn't matter to the new coach. I mean, yes, they all watch your tape. They all, you know, they see your stats, all that stuff. But you have to kind of reprove yourself. It's an interesting position to be in.
Hmm. The other piece of news that we should get to is the schedule came out today. The Big Ten announced a number of alterations based off of what happened during the 2020 pandemic season. If you recall, and I understand if you don't, a lot of people try to forget that particular season, but they made a lot of venue switches and alterations at that point, and they feel like this is sort of a process where there were some changes now for 2022, and they said there probably will be some changes for 2023 and beyond. So this isn't even necessarily a one-year fix. Lay out the schedule here.
Yeah.
So the first four games for Nebraska remain unchanged. They have the August opener against Northwestern and Ireland, and then three straight home non-conference games: North Dakota, Georgia Southern, Oklahoma. And then the regular season finale at Iowa stays the same. But everything else, there are seven games, two bye weeks in there that all have shuffled up essentially since then. From a venue standpoint, Nebraska now travels to Purdue and is home for Wisconsin. As somebody who likes to go to Madison, that made me sad personally. But that's how that went to get them back on track. And now the two bye weeks have also changed. They're now September 24th, which is after the Oklahoma game, before they get into Big Ten play. And then October 22nd, which is between the game at Purdue and the home game against Illinois.
Two straight years, the bye weekend's on my birthday. It's not bad.
There you go.
When's your birthday?
October 23rd.
There you go.
So
Well done, Jimmy.
It goes otherwise as this. October 1st, home against Indiana. October 8th at Rutgers. The 15th at Purdue. After the bye, October 29th against Illinois. November 5th, home against Minnesota. At Michigan versus Wisconsin. And then at Iowa. What stands out to you guys about the new
schedule? It's a damn good
schedule,
and people shouldn't complain. If they dare, they should.
That's what do you mean by good?
It's, well, first of all, your crossover games are Michigan, which is tough, Indiana, and Rutgers. That's a little different than Michigan, Ohio State, Michigan State. Second of all, I love having a bye week after four games. Are you kidding? Like, that's great. Like, there's nothing wrong with having a bye game after four. Because all your non-conference, so for example, you play your first game, whatever, and then you play your three non-cons, and then you get a week to kind of assess, you know, it's the weather's still warm, maybe you guys can get out, you can still practice outside, your bye week isn't cold, you can go out and recruit, you can go see guys early in the season, you know, it's not hectic time, maybe you can go out and make a few offers, and then you get three more: Illinois, Indiana,
Rutgers, Purdue.
So you get four more.
No, Indiana, Rutgers, Purdue. Illinois is after
the bye. It's Indiana, Rutgers, Purdue.
And so then you get a bye after seven. And then you got to play your last five. And, yeah, you got to grit your teeth. You got to play every day in November. Well, I don't know the bye weeks in November are anybody's friend. Because by then you're already beat up. And maybe you can heal a little bit. But, damn, you get a bye week at four and a bye week at seven. You got to play back-to-back real games one time. But your second real game is Purdue. Not going to be a big crowd there, probably.
That's probably the Wisconsin, going from having to play at Camp Randall to going to have to play. That's a huge upgrade.
It's a huge difference. Yeah, there's no question. Is the back half of the schedule tough? Yes, it is. It's very tough. Can you go 5-2 on the front side? Yeah, you can. And then you get Illinois for your sixth win. Like, I think it's a great schedule. And I didn't hear anything negative today. I'm just saying that to have a bye in week four after four games and then have a bye after seven games, you're going to heal up for a stretch run. You should be in really good physical condition. And your guys get out to recruit. And you got, you know, that double road game thing's not easy. You'd rather it wasn't Rutgers and Purdue. You'd wish it were some other thing. And playing Michigan on November what?
12th.
That's going to be an ass. That's going to be an ass. Not ass kicking, but it's going to be hard. I've been, you know, we've done the Michigan.
We've done
the Michigan in November and the Penn State in November. Those places are cold and they're wet and they suck. Like, they're not easy places to play. And people were like, well, it's cold in Nebraska too. Yeah, it is. And those suck too. The difference is, when you go to Penn State or Michigan, water comes off a lake, and it's cold, and it's wet, and it doesn't feel good. And so Nebraska's played a bunch of times in November at Penn State. It's never fun. It'll be hard to play at Michigan in November. That'll be cold, and it will be unpleasant. But shoot, outside of Michigan being on that schedule, how can you – I mean, that all sets up.
It does. Not only them playing in the cold thing, though, but the last five, Illinois, Minnesota, Michigan, Wisconsin, Iowa – all of those teams are coming right at you.
Sure.
They're like, that Absolutely. Is, it, and it is hard. It's going to be hard at the end of the season, no matter what, but you got to bring your tackling shoes for all of those games. Those are all the helmets and pads are making noise at the line of scrimmage type
Amen
games.
Amen to that. The Iowa game, interestingly enough, and we've done this a couple of times, Iowa never has its biggest crowd on Black Friday.
No.
Never. They just don't. It's not the most difficult Iowa environment. Games are never at night. So it was like 12:30. Everybody's fat and stuffed at home, and they don't go to the game. They get like 60,000 fans there. So you cannot complain about this one. This one sets up pretty nice. You get a really good picture of what this program can do in the first half of it. Just got to survive Northwestern. Survive that, and you can, you know, then you get to ready to play an Oklahoma team that I don't at
Who
this
knows,
moment.
Man?
I mean. That team is not going to probably be quite as good because they're losing some really good defensive players that have made a difference, and they've also lost some guys in the portal to wherever.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to compare Dylan Gabriel and Spencer Rattler, I mean, I think Rattler is a slightly better player, but they lost some other guys. So I think Oklahoma is it's going to be a journey for them a little bit.
Mm.
So you can win that one. I don't know, that's my thought. It's pretty good.
Nebraska will probably be favored in five of these first seven games. I'm thinking not Oklahoma and not at Purdue, but maybe at Purdue. Who knows what's happening by then?
Yeah, that could be. It's interesting because, like, you look at Trev Alberts has spoken on this with us not all that long ago, where it's like you look at this through the lens of like 2003, 2002, and you're like, oh, yeah, Nebraska should. They should have got off to a great start. They could start 6-0, or not 6-0, you know, 5-1, something like that. Of course, as we've learned over the last few years, like, none of it's a given. But it does. It feels like this is just sort of an on-ramp, and the difficulty gradually increases as we go. And, you know, I think back to what Nebraska players and Frost said at Big Ten Media Days last year, which is, just get us some momentum under our wings, right? Like, every year they're starting behind the eight ball, whether it was a game that was canceled with Akron or last year with Illinois and everything else in between. Like, kind of to your point, Sam, if they can beat a bad Northwestern team, you get North Dakota, Georgia Southern, who knows with Oklahoma, like, you might actually get some sort of momentum. And Nebraska's played from behind in terms of the scope of the season every year. And if they're ever going to flip right. that, like, this is the chance to do that, you know? And then you get into to Big Ten play, Indiana, Rutgers, right. Purdue, like, that's your chance to make some hay before things get really tough.
And to be clear, this is the caveat that I suppose this is claimer. The Big Ten is a really good football league. The Big Ten has teams every single year that are going to be very, very hard for Nebraska to beat, and they don't necessarily have the name of Michigan, Ohio State, and Wisconsin. So we understand that when they go to Purdue, we're not marking that down as a W. I had Purdue as the number 14 team in my final poll. So I have a deep appreciation for how good of a team Purdue is. I'm probably going to pick Purdue to potentially win the Big Ten West. So that's a road. That's a hard road game. Every game in the Big Ten is hard. So we're speaking relatively. We're not speaking of picking wins. We're too smart to do that now. We're not going to do that. I'm saying that relatively speaking, this schedule is a heck of a lot better than what they dealt with last year. And people are just going to have to, generally speaking, you want to play worse teams on the road and the good team, or I'm sorry, you want to play the good teams on the road and the worst teams at home. Why? Because good teams beat you at home. They always do. Michigan, Ohio State, they beat you at home. You'd rather play them on the road, where you're probably going to lose anyway if you played them at home, and play the bad teams at home. Henceforth, Illinois and Minnesota in Lincoln, I like that. I like that look a lot more than going to Illinois and Minnesota. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
One day, when Nebraska is a good team, they'll want to play the good teams at home because then they can upset them. But at this point, Nebraska has to just win six. And so you want the weakest teams possible in your stadium versus at their place. Because a road win is not a moral. It doesn't count the way that it does in basketball. So you might as well just play all the bad teams, as many bad teams as you can at home.
Because of the scheduling break, I don't know what else to call it. It's a good schedule. Do you think that changes the standards and expectations that Frost and the staff will be held to? For example, if Nebraska was slated to play the same schedule it played this season, next season, six wins, I'd say you're probably keeping the job. Six wins on this schedule is not six wins on that schedule. What do you guys think?
He's keeping his job if he wins six.
You think so?
Oh, okay. Yeah. This is a two-year conversation if they win six.
Okay.
You would reset the two-year conversation starting
absolutely.
This year.
Absolutely. Oh, well, I'm not, we ain't talking about what I would do. We're talking about what I think. Yeah. I think they absolutely want to get to a bowl game, and then let's see what you can do building this thing over time. I mean, again, if whatever fans may think of it, they want to try to see it work with Frost. A losing season makes that very hard. If you get to a bowl game, you go 6-6, I think people aren't going to be like, people have a desire to give him the benefit of the doubt. And especially when it's the first year with an offensive coordinator and a first year with all this other stuff. I know that people may have, that sounds however to people, but that's where the stakes are. I mean, Trev Alberts isn't in this for the short run, so. I guess we'll see.
It's interesting because this is sort of, it sets up to be the opposite of what we just talked about this last year, where in 2021 it was Nebraska might actually be a better team, but its record won't be reflected in that because of how difficult the schedule is. In this scenario upcoming, it's sort of the other end of that, where it's like, well, maybe they do get to 6-6 into a bowl game, but does that really show the progress that people are looking for? And so 6-6 to me is sort of the worst case scenario.
I agree. I have ideas about this schedule.
Because you don't really know. Like, if they crater, then you know, and you move on accordingly. If they break out, then hey, all those close losses last year really did portend things to come. 6-6 to me, man, that with this schedule and with the context of it, it would be hard to draw conclusions, actionable conclusions from that.
I don't know. Sam said we're too smart to pick wins on the schedule, so I'm not going to pick wins on the schedule. I think you could draw a conclusion from 6-6, a different kind of conclusion from 6-6 on the schedule. I think this is an extremely manageable schedule.
Yeah, I mean it is, and it would depend on were there blowouts, were there close games,
sure.
Just like 3-9. Not all 3-9 seasons are.
I guess, and this may be sort of veteran of whatever, but you're talking to somebody who's watched Nebraska make, we aren't going to put up with this crap decisions for 20 years. And it's gotten them nowhere. Like, we're not going to put up with Frank Solich going 9-3. Fire him. All right. They fired him. We're not going to put up with Bill Callahan having a losing season in year 4. Fire him. They fire him. We're not going to put up with Bo being a jerk. Fire him. They fire him. We're not going to put up with Mike Riley. Fire him. They fire him. Like, and then this is just, it's like, there does come a point where it's like, well, who the hell do you think you are? And again, I say that within the context of understanding that Scott Frost, 3-9, that was a lot of grace. And I get it. But I also say it as it relates to Fred Hoiberg. I'm like, okay, fire him. Who are you bringing in? Like, what is it you, what do you got back there on the bench? And if what does what you have back on the bench going to get you to like 10-2 and 11-1, or is what you got back there going to get you to 14-14 in basketball? Because if you pay out all this money and you start over and then you get, you know, I don't know, some guy that comes in and claps it up for 5 years. And, you know, well, they went 16-14. What do you want? It's better than Fred. Yeah, it is better than Fred. But, like, those are the questions that you always have to try to weigh. Like, you have to try to figure out that. And Nebraska football has to figure that out, too. If they go 6-6 next year, which would be the best record that the guy has posted, and then they let go of him, then they would be saying, well, you know, that wasn't good enough. Okay, well, then the next person comes in, and then it becomes, well, You said, which is exactly what happens. Mike Riley, the minute he came in here, it was like, oh, he's got to win 10. If he doesn't win 10, he's going to...
We're not just
he was gone because of that.
We're not just picking this number at a dartboard, though. I'm saying with this schedule, that's an important context.
I get
there.
That.
With this schedule,
I understand it, yeah.
6 wins better happen. And I think it's extremely possible that more than that could happen.
Right. Like, my franchise, the only team that I really root for in any sport is the Chicago Bears. They've been doing this for years. Lovey wasn't good enough. Foxy wasn't good enough. Trestman wasn't good enough. And now Matt isn't good enough. Well, they're going to bring in another guy, and he isn't going to be good enough, and then they'll fire him. And all the while, they're going to have about 20 seasons of bleh. Because nobody's good enough. Okay, so then who the hell are you? Like, that's a legitimate question to ask the Bears at this point. Like,
yes.
And I didn't like their last coach, to be clear. I'm glad he's gone. I could have hung with Lovey for more years. I could have hung with John Fox for more years. Like, so you have to start to, like, have those hard conversations about what are we trying to accomplish here if our standards are so high that everybody that we bring in is never good enough for them. Fair enough. Okay, so if you're going to have those kind of high standards, then dang, you better bring in a coach. Back up the Brinks truck and pay your $50 million and bring in the next Nick Saban, if that's what you're saying. Or have Teron Liu. Have him on speed dial. Teron?
What else do you do? Let me break this piece of news. Tyronn Lue will not be the next coach at Nebraska.
Well, that's probably not.
Not going to happen.
That's probably true.
It's not going to happen.
It will not. That's probably true. I agree with you. With Darren DeVries, Drake, I don't know. Maybe. What would he do here? I don't know.
Yeah.
That's the hard. These are the hard conversations. Yeah. Like, those are the kind of conversations that Trev Alberts has to have with people.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I think that's what we're going to talk about today. That was a good conversation. And man, it's just going to keep going. You're going to have a recruiting weekend. Basketball is going to keep playing basketball games.
That's accurate. I can confirm.
Baseball is going to start practicing here pretty soon, so we can talk about that in future weeks. And we're just going to keep rolling, man. It's going to be great. Thanks for listening. And, you know, we'll be back. Thanks.